Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All ministers and officials should now go to Case Orange. Repeat. This is an official colonial government broadcast.
And welcome to another episode of the Battlestar Galactica, as brought to you by Sci-Fi Wire. Hi, Trisha.
Hi, Mark.
Yay. You don't need intros from us anymore. You know who we are. If you are this deep into our show, episode 112.
Very good.
Yes. Or episode 12, the 112th, whatever. You know what we meant.
Well, you know, that's how in industry speak.
Mm.
The first season always starts with the ones. You start in the 100, so it's right. 101, 102. Mm. Second season, 201, 202, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
But to non-industry folks, they may think this is episode
112. You did 112 episodes of this? Where have I fucking been? Which means like The Simpsons is at this point on like 2804. Yeah. My goodness. So yes, we are here to talk about the first part of the two-part finale of season one, Kobol's Last Gleaming, part one.
Yes.
Yes. But before we do that, how you doing, Trisha?
Oh, that was a loaded question. Sigh. Yeah. No, I'm fine. Aside from I'm facing, I've discovered that the developer that flipped my house.
Oh, damn.
Made shortcuts that you don't see and inspectors don't see. And I'm facing a $30,000 renovation and a 1 month move out.
Oh.
In a year old house.
Son of a bitch.
And I don't have a job. So I'm kind of not happy.
I believe I can see that. I can see how you get to that emotional state of lack of happiness.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I gotta leave and this and that and this and
meh. That's exactly how I described my mood. Somebody asked me the other day on text, how are you doing? I went, meh. That was all I responded with. Meh.
Meh. Okay, I get it. No, that speaks volumes.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been a busy couple of weeks for me.
You've had some excitement.
I did. I went from being gainfully unemployed the last time we recorded to gainfully employed now on a show called Carnival Row, which will appear on your Amazons at some point later this year. So we're a couple weeks into that. And then I had been nominated. We talked about it on this old podcast. So nominated along with my Castle Rock brethren for a Writers Guild award.
Yeah, you were just in New York, right?
I was just in New York for the award ceremony because we won said award. And I didn't know, they don't tell you you're going to win the award. So you have that thing where you're in the audience and they're reading nominees. And
did you have a speech prepared?
I did not. And
you
here's
did not.
Why. Because there's the Writers Guild West, which most people belong to. There's the Writers Guild East, which I belong to. And they have two separate award ceremonies on the same night. One in LA, one in New York. And you would think they'd be simulcast together so everybody could kind of be. But no, they run parallel to each other.
LA, New York always does that.
It always does that. But so
that's like hockey in Edmonton, in Alberta, Edmonton, Calgary. Never mind.
Yeah. But
showing my Canadian roots.
But so much hockey. So like I get to the East Coast show and there was one other writer on the show with me. He lives in Massachusetts. So we're both the East Coasters and everybody else on staff is in the Shrine Auditorium over there, the West Coast. We're like, okay, well, if we win, clearly the showrunners will in the West Coast will give a speech and everything will be fine. And they will air that speech in the East Coast and we'll just clap and maybe they'll hand us a trophy after the fact.
But weren't you on the East Coast earlier?
I was on the East Coast earlier because I was going to see my brother.
So did you guys give a speech first?
No, because we were running late.
Okay. So 3 hours late?
No, like 10 minutes behind.
Okay.
And so we're sitting in the audience and then suddenly some, you know, like show organizer comes up and says, okay, well, if your show wins, you have to get up and accept it. We're like, what? We're not going to win. That's fine. Who cares?
Did you get a little floppy sweat?
A little bit. And then, like, there was a guy sitting next to me who was reading the Deadline, was doing a live blog of the awards. And L.A. announced, oh, Castle Rock won 10 minutes before they were set to read our nomination on the East Coast. And so me, the other guy, like,
That's a spoiler alert.
It's a super spoiler alert. And, like, I had friends in the crowd in the West Coast texting me pictures of my bosses getting trophies. I'm like, Scott, I think we have to make a speech. He's like, you make the speech. I'm like, nah, why do I have to make this speech? You were a higher rank than I was. You make the speech. He's like, I'm not making a speech. So 8 minutes later, they call the name. And so we got to run up there. And then I got to give a speech to like 700 writers and Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. We were literally like sitting front row center because he was nominated for Quiet Place and she was there as a good wife to support him. And the only people I could see were you know, British and American television and film royalty.
Well, I'm sure you did fantastic. I have not seen video of it. I have seen the post that you made and you looked dashing.
Thank
and you
very
looked
much.
Like you knew what you were talking about up there.
I don't remember what I said most of it. I think I just tried to thank the people I would need to thank to get more jobs.
Right.
You know, and then thank like my family so that they wouldn't disown me.
Mm-hmm.
My mom took a picture, a video of it, but it's very shaky because it's like mom and like from the back of the house and it's a little like wobbly, which is adorable. Which is adorable. But yeah, so that is a thing that happened in between the last episode of the Battlestar Galactica cast and this one.
Well, that's very exciting.
It really, really
is. I am happy for you.
Thank you so much, Trisha.
Very proud of you.
It is nice to share with our little Battlestar family.
Right?
Yay. Good things. And we may have more good news on the horizon, but we can't talk about it just yet.
Not quite yet.
Not quite yet, but it's good
things. We have two good things on the horizon.
We have two good things on the horizon? right, I don't
know. Is that what we were talking about? We were talking about
That's one of the good things. Yes. And the other good thing is the other good
yes,
thing.
Yes, the other good thing is that we were on par on that one.
Yeah, Seattle. So we will tell you what happens in Seattle at a later date.
At a later date.
But just to be fair, something will be happening in Seattle. We can't say what.
Well, in April, I'm going to be doing a... Oh, shit. That's my phone. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
In April, I'm going to be doing a motorcycle charity ride there.
Oh, to Seattle? How long a
Not
ride
to
is
to Seattle. It's in Seattle.
Oh.
And I've done it for like 7, 8 years now at this point. Katie and I do it.
Mm-hmm.
Starbuck. For those of you who don't know Katie. And which all of you do. But yeah, we've done it with
Katie Couric. You can do a motorcycle ride.
Katie Couric rides motorbikes. We've been doing it for ages now, and Jeff Henshaw, who used to be formerly at Microsoft, Xbox, wonderful, amazing man, started it with a bunch of the Microsoft guys that would play hooky on a sunny day in April, because there aren't that many.
You got to pick a shot.
And to go up to the tulip fields.
They have tulips.
The Rootsing Garden tulip fields.
Ooh.
And so now it started this thing, and Katie and I have helped out for many years now, and we go up and we raise a lot of money for Seattle Humane Society. So, but that has nothing to do with why we're going to be there with the Galacticast.
Do you bring your bike, or do you rent a bike when you're up there?
Eastside Harley loans us bikes.
Nice. Way to go, Eastside Harley.
Yes. And last year, Jonathan Fernandez from Lethal Weapon came up with his lovely wife, and he dropped his bike.
He laid it down?
He didn't lay it down. He just dropped it at a very particular tough left-hand turn, and he rides a Harley Sportster 1200, and we were on Harley Davidson Street Glides, which are like 900 pounds, and he also had his passenger, which is his wife, who's like minute, like she's miniature size. But still, it's like
she's
weight
the straw
on the back
that broke the camel's back.
And it was too damn heavy. I love Jonathan, so if he's listening to this, I'm teasing you, Jonathan. No, but he's coming back this year as well. They're
very nice.
Back, so.
Maybe he'll learn to handle his bike this time. It's too much steel for you, buddy.
I am so scared every time, because where Katie and I stay is like this parking garage, and it's like this, you know, the roundabout parking garage to get out. And then when you get to the tulip fields, you have to park in a gravel parking lot. 800 to 1,000 pound bike on gravel, I'm 130 pounds. Mm. Like, you know, it's hard.
I can buy it.
I have not dropped it yet, but I knock on wood.
Good for you.
I am not. I hopefully won't this year.
I have. I've never ridden a motorcycle.
You have not?
No. No. I'm
you could ride bitch on the back of mine.
It is the only way I can fly at this point.
Actually, I've never carried anyone, so no. I wouldn't allow it because I like you too much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You don't want to hurl me into a bank of tulip thorns.
No.
Tulips have thorns? I don't know. No. You can pretend they do. It is a thing that I would like to learn someday. My wife will also need some convincing to allow me to learn. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's the dream of every kid who grew up watching Evel Knievel jump over snake canyons to be like, I need to do that. Don't need to do that.
No.
But it seems like fun.
I ride pretty safe. Mm. I drive a lot less safe in a car.
Really?
There's more around you to protect you.
You get two more whole wheels.
Yeah.
And like doors and shit.
Yeah. Exactly. I told you I get decapitated and think I'm about to film next week. So that could easily happen on a motorbike.
Totally.
My cats are chasing each other. Never mind the pounding.
They're also driving unsafe.
Okay. So who wrote this?
Mark? This episode, Cobalt's Last Gleaming Part 1, has a story by Anna Telepe by credit. Story by executive producer David Icke,
mm-hmm.
and teleplay by executive producer and developer Ronald D. Moore. I know. One of these days we'll get to talk to Ron about this TV show that he here created. And it was directed by Michael Reimer.
Oh, Michael.
I love Michael. Michael! You're the best, Michael!
Yeah. I think I've said this in another podcast. He's like, he's so fracking direct. He literally will just look at you. He's like, well, that wasn't the best one. Let's go again. Like, okay, thanks.
Is he Australian?
Was that my attempt at this?
I mean, you killed it.
Yes, he is Australian.
Hello, mate.
Hello, mate.
That wasn't your best. Let's try this one again.
That's also not really Australian. I barely had the mate. I lost it about halfway through. It turned into my bad Russian.
It did. Mm. Yeah. You got called out on your bad Russian. Or was that me?
No, somebody gave me some shit on the internet.
I wasn't sure if it was you or me that got called out because we were both on it.
We were both doing our bad Russian voice and they said that's not
Russian. Okay, so we are just starting, for those of you that are wanting to follow along, we are just starting right at the beginning when Lee and his father are about to start boxing.
Yes, punching each other in the face, the way fathers and sons are wont to do, beat each other up.
And you think the young guy's gonna get him because he's hitting to the ribs, he's getting there.
And like, you know, Eddie's kind of reaching out. He's kind of circling around and his son is giving him a bunch of like crap.
Looks like he's getting a little tired. Mm-hmm.
The old man is out there. The old man's got some guns on him, though.
He does. I noticed that when I was rewatching earlier today. I was like, ooh, Eddie. Mm-hmm. And then now we see Starbuck's foot.
Yeah. Now we see Starbuck in the sheets.
I think this is the first time we see Starbuck in the sheets, right?
I think so. Yeah. I don't think we ever see her. And you can't tell who she's in the sheets with.
Well, that's Lee.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, but not really, though.
No, because I was there. I remember. I remember because when we come back to that and we see that somebody else.
Mm-hmm. They'll bait and switch.
And remember, I'm in the scene.
That's right.
So I happen to have been in there watching Katie pretend to have sex with two different guys.
Wow.
No, but this, you know what struck me when I was rewatching this earlier today is the opening. I don't know if it's considered a montage when there's talking, but in some of the scenes, but is it still considered a montage? The opening sequence?
Yeah, I think it would be because you're not in any scenes really, and it's you're cutting back and forth.
Right,
and
these clips of things.
Yeah.
I found it an extremely strong opening. You've got the Adama father and son boxing. You've got Starbuck with having sex. You've got Boomer contemplating suicide. Mm-hmm. You've got Hilo running from Sharon, who we know just found out that Cylons look like humans. And we don't know if he knows that they just cloned humans. Like if he still thinks Boomer on Galactica is actually human.
Mm-hmm.
or if she's a Cylon as well. Like, I feel like throughout the episode, Hilo thinks that Boomer is actually human, and the Cylons have just copied.
Right.
Right. And then
you got like Galactica Boomer.
You get Galactica Boomer
like fondling
about
a pistol about to, like, had we felt that she was suicidal any point before here?
I don't know. I mean, we'd felt that she was troubled. She was starting to, you know, question things, but this is definitely the episode. And we find out later on where she's talking about, how she feels like she's about to hurt someone. Mm. So her programming is starting to kind of glitch.
Yep.
And I just found it a very powerful, like, fighting and sex and like violence and everything all together. And now Lee just got his head.
Yeah. He gets his bell rung at the same time that Katie is calling out his name.
Calling out Lee's name.
Lee's name.
And it's actually Baltar.
Yeah. Now this is
and Sharon's about as putting the gun in her mouth, like
just as the other Sharon gets shot.
Just as Hilo shoots the other Sharon. Yeah. So it's a very powerful opening.
It's very lyrical in a way. Like it feels, and I wonder if this is the kind of thing that only a showrunner could get away with writing, which it feels like it's a departure from the way the show had felt before. Mm-hmm.
Well, we came right off the political episode, right? Yeah. Which was not your favorite.
Not my favorite.
Not my favorite. Favorite?
Not your favorite either.
I was Australian there. Not my favorite either.
We was like peas and carrots, Jenny. Not my favorite. And she was in her Cloud Nine party dress.
She was in her Cloud Nine party dress.
So we're picking.
Which right it up. Picks up immediately, obviously, because she's in her Cloud Nine post-political.
Yeah. But party it is a really like, A, it's an efficient way of looping every major storyline in together, except for maybe Laura Roslin and her dreams and visions,
which
and stuff.
Get heavy in this episode.
They totally get heavy in this episode, but it's done in this kind of like both heavy way, because it's got this classical music that's tying it all together, but it's light as a feather, and that it just ebbs and flows and bobs and weaves, and it's a gorgeous way of just rooting you in every major drama in this show.
And now I see myself here, and after Katie, Starbuck has said Lee instead of at climax instead of Baltar. And I remember shooting the scene, and Katie has said this many times on panels and things, but it was so awkward because I'm literally in the room watching them simulate sex. Mm-hmm. And first it's Lee, it's Jamie. And then literally the ADs are like, okay, Jamie, you're out. Baltar, you're up. Or James, you're up. Jamie, you're out. James, you're up. And I'm sitting in there, and Katie's looking at me like, and then James hops on board. Like, it was so like awkward.
Jamie's punching out, just clocking out. Clang. Yeah. All right, Captain, how you doing? I'm all right. Yeah, you get in there. All right, how you doing? Cheerio.
Yep. And you're like, Katie, you're in the same position. Now, new guy. And it was very funny, but
I have a question for you.
Yes.
In that scene where you're been watching, you know, random people have sex with Katie, are you almost crying? Is there like water in your eyes from emotion?
There is a little, and I was thinking about that earlier today when I was rewatching, and it's because Six has said before she doesn't care. Like, she even pushes him in the last episode to like make out with the. Go have sex with a reporter that is doing the Sharon Stone instinct thing, basic instinct thing, right? And for Six, because she loves Baltar, she doesn't care about the physical. He can go screw whatever he wants. But she's sensing that he cares for her. Mm. And because of him being called, you know, any man I don't think wants to be called another man's name during sex. But his reaction was you know, very hurt. And so Six is sensing something more emotionally, and that's what's upsetting her.
Yeah. I mean, for the record, nobody wants to be called another man's name during sex.
No, nor woman.
Unless like that man's name is like Apollo Creed. You know, like unless it's like, oh, awesome. You're calling me Superman. Excellent. I win the lottery. Right? Not the worst thing.
That's like, okay.
Oh, you know what? He is way better than I am. Cool. Thank you. Something to aim for.
Yeah.
Aspirational.
But not somebody else that you know is on the ship.
Right. you know.
And you probably already kind of feel like, ooh, he's the CAG. He's like this big.
He's got some stuff. He's doing a thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see how that would be troubling to a already frail male ego like Gaius Baltar.
Yes. And now we are, this is, I found really interesting because I'm not a religious person, but this episode specifically deals in many ways with religion and believers and non-believers and whatever. And obviously this show is about believing. Mm-hmm. In many ways, but you know, the president wasn't necessarily a believer.
No.
But she meets Alosha, and now Alosha believes because of, you know, the dream she had with in the episode with Tom Zarek and the serpents and everything. And I just lost my train of thought because I looked at Baltar and I got jealous.
Sucking down all that Midori.
He's about to get mad at Lee.
Yeah. But I do agree with you that like this episode for me, especially going forward in the show, because the show deals so much with faith and with gods and with religion and all of that stuff, that it grounds it in a belief that it's real, because Laura Roslin's journey is, I wasn't a believer, but then the scriptures say this, and now I found the place that the scriptures said I was going to find. Like it's objective proof for this character, and to a certain degree for the show, that in the text of the show, these gods were real, and this place is real, and this prophecy, as we'll see, will bear fruit in ways that will help us, inform us going forward, that when people are having debates about religion and later on when people may or may not turn into angels and stuff, but like the show believes that this stuff is real. And this is the first place that we get that real proof of it.
Yes.
And it was really interesting because I remember, you know, this is my first rewatch in a very long time. And so as you get later into the show, you begin to wonder what the show's position on faith, especially in regards to the sort of old gods of Kobol is. And here is where you get the, oh no, this it's absolute planted flag. It believes in the text, this is real.
And everything that the president is, her hallucinations, everything is leading towards, like it's exact in the scriptures.
Mm-hmm. Totally. You know, and the other characters can debate it. And as we'll see later, Adama has his feelings and his beliefs, and that is a source of conflict. But we are led to believe that this all happened and will happen again.
And it will happen again. Yes.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, drunk, belligerent Baltar. Yay.
Right, beating up on Lee.
Beating up on Lee. We'll be right back. So welcome back, everybody. We're about to watch Baltar get ugly.
He did a very good job of playing angry tipsy.
Yes.
Like I know myself, if I get tipsy, I can be fun tipsy or I can be angry tipsy.
You're an angry drunk?
Oh.
Oh, child. Hey, now.
You got some stuff to learn. No.
Maybe next week. The only drunk Trisha that I've seen has been happy drunk Trisha.
I tend to be happy drunk. No, but I think he did a really good job. You know, he's not slurring. He's not at the point of being drunk. He's just enough to make the things that he would think in his head come out.
Yeah. And you can't compete with me. I always win. I'm the vice president of the colonies, blah, blah, blah.
And he did win the card game.
He did win the card game.
So he's kind of telling the truth. He doesn't win Starbucks.
He is not going to win the Starbucks.
Spoiler alert. Close your ears.
Yeah. As things evolve.
But this, I think they did this really well. It was like when Starbucks comes in and there's this tension. And of course, Lee, as we find out, can decipher from their body language and what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And it comes back later in the episode.
Yeah. But there was a nice bit of choreography where like Baltar drops his cards and she comes in and she's like, hey, card game. Nobody called me. Mm-hmm. And then he picks up his cards and stands up. But she sees him and then it's, oh yeah, now I'm going to go someplace else.
Yeah.
This is not where I want to be right now.
Yeah. No, I thought that was and then this scene where now Baltar is with Roslyn and she's trying to kind of school him on politics mm-hmm. and maybe the mundane side of politics to some extent.
Yeah, because she, having just come from her MRI, having realized that Doc Cottle, the doc who never coddles.
She has less than 6 months, maybe. Yes,
totally. Like, your expiration date is coming up pretty quickly. And so she's motivated to get Baltar, like, listen, here's some shit you got to know if you're mm-hmm. going to run the fleet. And he's not in the head space to learn anything.
No, he's jealous about Lee and now Six is there. And just like, again, James did this very well yeah. of bouncing back and forth between Mary and Six. And he loses it a little bit. I think the president thinks he's, but he gets it at the end where he makes it appear that he's overrun with.
Yeah.
Stuff. He's stressed, whatever. But in reality, he's...
Yeah, like the top of his speech is like, I can't handle this. What made you think that I could learn all this stuff and I'm not ready? And then the tail end of his speech, you know, is like, you know, it's like, no, I don't think I can handle this right now. How you think I could wrap my head and be turned so quickly by a new thing? Mm-hmm. It astounds me. How you think I'd be able to cope with this responsibility? I'm not your plaything.
Not your plaything.
Yeah. I don't work for you. I don't need to take this abuse from either of you. Like, it's always that thing where it starts here and spins there. And he does like exasperated farce so well.
He really does.
He is such a gifted comic actor.
I was doing an Instagram video there. Sorry, I kind of checked out for a second.
Yeah, sorry. We're trying to fill.
One of my cats just jumped up, and I know Mark's allergic. So, yeah. Summer, get down.
Hi. Thank you for the respiratory distress. Yeah,
thanks for the little visit. No, but you're right. You had your Claritin. You're fine.
I've been dosed.
No, but he's you're right. He does. Oh, and I get to slam his head into the mirror here,
which is so nice.
But you're right. He does that balancing so good, and that the slamming his head into the mirror was so much fun. But it really was him. Like, you know, when you're doing it, you just rest your hand on the back of his head, and then you tense your arm to look like you're pushing, and it's like a dance. It's a choreographed dance, right?
And then he
slams his head into the mirror.
It's so good. And I love that she, in this scene, she's telling him for the first time, it's not safe to remain on board Galactica.
Yes.
You know, and Baltar muses that there's a silent agent is somebody going to get activated? What's going to go on? And
now I know what's about to happen. And viewers that have watched this before know what's about to happen in the next episode.
Yeah. But Head Six, because again, Head Six is inside Baltar's head, can't really know what's about to happen. Mm-mm. Just knows that, or has a sense that bad things are on the horizon, but can't put a finger as to what, which is really, it's such a tricky dance to have to dance of the, what can she tell him that he doesn't already know? And how can she tell him things that she can't possibly know, mm-hmm. but do bear fruit in the end?
Yes.
Yeah. And then here's Boomer. Poor Boomer.
Maybe that's a hint.
What? You cut from that scene straight to Boomer. Yeah, and she and Crashdown, who apparently find every good thing that's ever been while they're out searching for stuff.
Although they blame Gaeta for this, for the jump coordinates.
True.
And for jumping too close to the planet. I'm like, you're still pretty far away. Yeah, like you're not down, about guys. To crash. Like, settle down.
There's just space distances here. Like, you got a long way to go, pal.
But she's pulling up on the throttle really
strong.
We're
going to kill us. We got to jump to the planet. It's like, zimmer down there.
Now, we definitely see here in this episode that Boomer is starting to crack.
Yes. I mean, and it's very similar to the first time we saw her in Crashdown, where she can't quite see the water on the scanner, and there's a bomb under her seat that she herself planted. Mm-hmm. Like, those, the seeds of her cracking have been very well laid. The seeds of her as suicidal have been a little less well laid, but we get there pretty quickly in this episode of the, you know, I can't trust myself anymore.
Right, because she doesn't know she's a Cylon.
Yeah.
So she just, but she's starting to have these... Mm-hmm. Dark, as she calls them, dark thoughts.
Yeah.
And
yeah, which are real. Absolutely.
And so part of her must know that she was probably the one that put the bombs in the water tanks mm-hmm. and was probably the one that left the hatch open and probably the one that, you know, she's doubting herself now.
Yeah.
But she's She's about to be a robot that needs to be decommissioned.
No spoilers.
She's not going to.
Nothing goes spoiler.
Yeah.
And we are back on Caprica. Cylon occupied Caprica after Hilo has shot his version of Sharon, but can't bring himself to kill her.
No.
Like, he can't quite reconcile the fact that, like, she could be more than a machine. And it there's a bit of self-loathing here, too. There's a bit of, like, mm-hmm. you're a machine, but you've got to be more than that because I had feelings for you. And I did things with you. And then I hate that I did things with you, but I can't kill you because those feelings are kind of still there. And like you said, he's beginning to maybe come up against the idea that every Sharon is a Cylon, not just this one.
Yes. But she hasn't told him that.
She hasn't told him that yet. But, like,
she's just now telling him that she can feel and she's cold and he should let her, because he's under shelter and she's not. But, yeah, I mean, the betrayal he must feel, right?
Yeah. Like, both externally, internally, emotionally, physically, like, he just feels like he's been thrown to the metaphorical wolves.
Yeah, but he needs her to get off the planet.
Totally. Yeah, and he's
so
still...
it's sort of self-preservation to keep her alive, but I don't think he has it in him to...
No, he can't
to kill actually
her.
Kill her.
Yeah, because if he could have, he would have.
And he's now... a good enough shot. He didn't have to shoot her in the shoulder. He could have shot her in the head or the heart.
And he could have stood right over and finished the job if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Now we come to a scene in which our boy, Lee Adama,
is jealous as frack.
Yes. And
because he knows that she slept with Baltar.
A bit of a dick. You know, and, like, yes, there's totally, like, unresolved feelings. And we felt that throughout most of this first season, that, like, clearly these two have some emotional freight and connection between them.
Now, I wonder if she hadn't been with Zach, his brother, if he would have acted on those feelings earlier.
Maybe, but, like, Zach's been dead for a while, as far as we're led to believe in the show, that, like, respect for his own brother's death buys you a year. You know, maybe, if you're being overly generous. But he comes so hot at her.
So hot. And not in a good way, not in a, like, oh, he's hot. No, like, in a, I'm the CAG, you listen to me, and...
Yeah, like, he's using his position, his authority, like...
And just belittle, like, just basically telling her she's a slut.
Yeah.
So he can sleep with whoever he wants, but she does, and she's a bad person.
Yeah, like, this is an ugly look for Lee.
She turns around and punches on him, and he punches her straight back.
And it's like, listen, I've had people that I've had feelings for who've slept with other dudes, but I have definitely not punched them in the face because of it. Because, like, if she's one of the guys, then you don't have those feelings for her because she's one of the guys. And if she's not unless you're gay, which, still totally cool. But if she's not one of the guys and you have feelings for her, then punching her does not seem like it's on the menu.
But she punched first.
It doesn't matter.
But in Battlestar, which is sort of like there's unisex heads, there bathrooms, there's, you know, like there seems to, the gender bias isn't there in Battlestar.
Yeah.
That, like, there is in our own society. That, right. But granted, like, there's a physical difference.
Yes.
But she did punch him. So is he just supposed to take it? Like, I don't agree with, granted, I don't agree with punching women, but
in general,
I also don't agree with a woman just being able to, like, wail on a man and him just be able to stand there and go,
well, it's like he comes into it hot. He provokes her.
Yeah. He provokes her completely.
And she hits him. And, like, that seems like, you know, maybe a slightly over response to,
like, he should shove her
something.
Yeah.
But, like, just the, like, I'm going to deck you across the cheek.
It was so fast. Bam, bam,
bam. And it's like, yeah. And you just spent the whole time reminding us that you're her boss. And then you're punching a subordinate officer. Like, none of that is good. None of that feels good.
No.
Or, like, defensible. Like, how can he legitimately give a shit who she sleeps with?
And there's... Exactly. They're not together.
Yeah.
At this point, they are not a couple. So she can sleep with whoever she wants to sleep with.
Yeah. Like, it's just that it is freighted with not a good look for you, Lee.
Mm-mm.
This, you are not the shiniest CAG in the shiny CAG fleet.
And there were people watching. Mm-hmm. That was on the hangar deck.
Totally.
Like there were people watching.
Suddenly, like that's brig worthy.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, brig worthy.
But his dad's the admiral.
Right.
Well, commander still at this point. Right?
He's still the commander. Still again, commander. They just spent most of the morning punching each other in the face too. So maybe it's in the air. I don't know.
Maybe that's why. Maybe because he was just like all riled up from this morning from losing to his dad.
I had to punch somebody.
He's like, I get punched again. Maybe it was just like a natural reaction.
Right. Enough with the punching. So now we are back in Laura Vision world, in which, you know, they found what they assume is a planet with awesome resources that they could maybe make a home on. They do a surface scan of the planet, and it kind it's of habitable. Becomes clear that it's habitable. It feels like, you know, a nitrogen oxygen rich environment, mm-hmm. and maybe it could be COBOL. Maybe it could be the birthplace of mankind, where humanity lived in harmony until the exodus of the 13 tribes.
I was just going to say, where the gods and men.
Ooh, the gods and men.
Lived
I left the
in
thing
paradise.
Out. Man, you listened so
the
much better at that.
Until the exodus of the 13 tribes.
Well done.
Well, I rewound and paused a few times, so I got it.
Yeah, the best part is we'll cut both of our versions out and lay in the official quote. So,
yes,
but
no,
Trisha was right.
The hallucinations that she's seeing is, you know, they're looking at recon photos, right, from mm-hmm. Galactica, and it's ruins.
Yeah.
And Laura picks the picture up and goes, this is a city. This is a habitable, like, what are you talking about? And and that's when they realize she's having another hallucination, and she describes what she's seeing, and lo and behold, it's exactly what's in the scriptures.
Totally. Like with a picture and everything. There's
the
an
forum
opera house.
And opera house in the city of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
Kobol, road,
six roads
Kobol.
Leading to the central city, whatever, yes. blah, blah, blah.
So now I think at this point, Laura Roslin actually believes that she is the dying leader that is going mm-hmm. to lead them to Earth.
Yes. She 100% believes that. And the show 100% believes that that's true, which is why the viewer 100% believes that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of great. Like the myths, the scriptures, the prophecies, it's all real. So say we all.
So say we all.
Yeah. And then Boomer.
Oh, this next
Boomer
scene.
Boomer and Baltar.
I remember this being really tough for them to film.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Boomer is about to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And for the second time this episode, right?
Yeah.
But you have a feeling now that it's actually... She's not in her uniform. Like she's
on the ragged edge.
Yes.
Of making a choice.
And Baltar interrupts her.
And like the weird part of both of the of this whole sequence is that both of these characters are doing what they feel to be heroic,
mm-hmm.
which is Sharon has these ideas that like, I feel like I'm going to hurt somebody. I feel like I'm going to do somebody, you know, I feel like I'm going to do a lot of harm. And maybe this is the only way to stop that from happening. And Baltar agrees with her. And
he knows she's a Cylon.
He knows she's a Cylon. And so what he's doing here is he is pushing her over the edge mm-hmm. into committing suicide.
It's so hard. I remember James just being really hard on James to film this episode or this scene because... He knew the point was, is he knows of everybody. Mm-hmm. He knows that she's a Cylon.
Mm-hmm.
And Six has also told him, you can't be on Galactica because something's bad's going to happen. And he now sees she's about to commit suicide, and he pushes her gently towards it without being obvious.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
if she had a different frame of mind, she would have inferred mm-hmm. something different from what he was saying.
But yeah, like his speech that, you know, sometimes we must embrace that which opens up for us. Life can be a curse as well as a blessing. You will believe me when I tell you there are far worse things than death in this world. What I say is meaningless. Listen to your heart. Embrace that which you know to be the right decision.
I wrote that down too. Look at it.
Embrace
nice. Your heart.
Yeah.
Embrace that which you know to be the right decision.
But yeah, like it is the most inhuman thing he's doing here, which is... kill yourself. It's a great idea.
Now, is it, and I don't think at this point it's self-preservation for him. I think it's he's trying to preserve because he knows he's trying to possibly stop something you know, help actually the rest of the humans.
Yeah.
So maybe he thinks he's actually doing something good here.
I think both of those characters think they're doing something heroic. And probably against what Head Six would like him to do. Like she would like him to just let whatever is going to happen, happen.
Well, and I say she's a weak model, but it's, there is a moment here when, you know, you hear the spoiler, you hear the gunshot after they've walked out, and it's,
yeah,
it's not a happy moment
for them. It's harrowing.
It's very harrowing.
You know, here's a guy who just walked out of a room, and instead of being like the help in the suicide hotline, like he's pushing her over the edge, and it works. It's incredibly damning.
Isn't there a case right now where there's like a teenage girl that she, it was her boyfriend or ex-boyfriend or something, and he called her up with suicidal thoughts, and she told him to do it, and he did it, and now she's being charged with
murder,
assisted murder, or attempted murder, or something.
Wow.
Which, well, we find out in a minute that
involuntary manslaughter.
But she, to her defense, to his defense, Baltar's defense, Sharon is a Cylon.
Mm-hmm. True, but you know, it is, as we have been led to believe by this show, they have a right to life. We've met enough Cylons that we've formed bonds with and we believe in, especially this Sharon, of like, yeah, we want to see her alive. Why wouldn't we want to see her alive?
And we do see her now.
And this scene is also like really tender and uncomfortable.
And uncomfortable because she dismisses him at the end too. Like he's coming in there to be there for her. And she's like, you broke up with me. Fuck off.
Yeah. You know,
Frack off. Sorry.
It's our podcast. We can do what we want. But it's like, here's a guy wrestling with what it must feel like to find somebody that you used to have feelings for.
And he still does.
But also turned away and sent packing after they survive a suicide attempt. Like there's that awkwardness, a tentativeness, like not knowing what to say because anything you say is going to be the wrong thing to say.
Yeah, he played that well of that awkwardness of not knowing what to say. You're right. You don't know what to say.
There is no right thing to say. You know, like what you need to do is just listen, but he's got to, like he's trying to make an overture and she just smacks him down.
Yeah.
You know,
she does tell him the truth. She does tell him that she was attempting to kill herself.
Yeah. It's like, and I wake up
less worse than that, but
I wonder who I am. I wake up and wonder if I'm going to hurt someone. And then when the chief is like, you need help. And she's like, I went to you for help and you sent me away. You made that clear. And she dismisses him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thanks for coming down, Chief. You're dismissed.
Now, the one thing that bugs me about this is once she heals.
No scar.
There's no scar for the rest of the series. She just blew a hole through her cheek with a gun.
Cylons have like range. Super good healing capabilities.
True. Maybe that should have been an indicator for people.
I know. Look how quickly she's healing like a baby. Because that skin is so new. It's like a new car smell off of all these Cylons.
Did you know that just brought up a thing. I think it's in China that the new car smell is not looked at as a good thing.
Really?
And so they actually, there's a company that takes the new car smell away from cars. Like uses it for a while or something like that.
Wow.
I saw something on a note. Maybe it's not China. Maybe I don't know where it is, but it was that where, never mind.
There's just some dudes like, listen, Milt, it's time for you to get your beans. Go sit in that car for a while. We got to get rid of this new car smell.
Eat your beans, sit in the car, boss. Like, yeah.
Close these windows. I'll be back in like 2 hours. I'll take care of this new car smell for you.
That was a digression. Sorry.
That's all right. You're used to this by now. This is 12 episodes in. You know, this isn't on rails. So, Adama and Roslyn and their fundamental difference of opinion.
Yes.
She believes and he just won't.
Although she's a new believer.
She's a new believer, but she's a deep believer because she's had an abundance of proof to point her to believe that this is Kobol and to believe that she needs the arrow of
Apollo
to
Although she is not telling him about her hallucinations and stuff at this point.
No. She's not.
She's just telling him that this is probably Kobol and whatever, but she is not, correct me if I'm wrong, telling him the whole truth here.
No, she's not telling him about the visions of serpents. She's not telling him about the dying leader prophecy.
And what Leoben has said. And
right. She's just saying, if we find the arrow of Apollo and we open the tomb of Athena, we can find the way towards Earth.
Right, which we need to jump back to Caprica to get the arrow of Apollo that is in the museum.
Right. She wants to, and now they have a Cylon Raider that has a far greater jump capacity than any of the Raptors do. And she wants to use it to send a mission back to Caprica to get it. And he says, no, that's a military asset. I think this is bullshit. You can't have it.
Yes.
Yes. In but so many words.
And we are Raptors have now gone to...
Yeah, they're jumping for a planetary survey.
They're going down to Kobol, they think is Kobol, to do recon.
Yes, with Baltar, the Chief, Callie, and Crashdown all on one of those raptors.
And lo and behold, what's there?
Ooh, Cylon Baystar and a whole fleet of
raiders.
Yeah, it's ugly. And the minute they jump in, they lose one of the raptors. The one that Baltar and the Chief and Callie and Crashdown are on gets wounded. Gets a hit in the crossfire.
And they are going down.
And the last raider jumps back to Galactica.
Cicinus is back. And he, with his long eyelashes, gets told to tell the other raptor, the third raptor, to jump back.
Yes.
And I loved this scene watching because as an actor, this is really fun to do this kind of stuff because it's all frenetic and crazy. And it's obviously to do a lot with the filming, you know, the cameramen they're moving the camera around but it's these type of scenes can be either hellish or really fun, but I have a feeling they had a lot of fun shooting scene.
And like James has crazy eyes for all of it. Like he's just crazy panic.
He's like, I'm going down. Like he's literally like, I'm going down. Like everybody's in
Cicinus
is trying to like radio back to tell, you know, to tell the other raptor to jump and Crashdown's trying to take control of, you know, because the pilot's been shot and now the frickin' windshield's going to blow in, thankfully, down far enough that...
Yes, in the atmosphere.
In the atmosphere.
It's not a death sentence.
But it's a pretty intense scene, and I was watching it going, they did that really well.
Yeah, it looks like super fun.
Yeah. Easy to get hurt in those scenes too.
Yeah, because you're all just do you think they put the ship on a gimbal and shook it around, or was it just a camera? Because you've seen the footage from like
we call them poor man's process.
Yeah,
on cars.
Yeah,
in cars when the car is supposed to be moving.
Totally, but when you see like the next generation footage when they would do like the shipboard attack, which is just ultimately the camera just moving, and then they would motion stabilize it, so it just literally it's just Patrick Stewart doing like this, and everybody's like, oh my god, we're going down. It's hilarious.
I have not seen that. Because I wasn't in ships too often on this, but whenever I've been in car scenes or things like that, there was a few times where I was on the ship in Battlestar and everybody has to know which way they're supposed to like sway first.
Right. And left and right.
A lot has to do with the cameramen in this and because they move it. And, you know, with Battlestar also being kind of documentary filmmaking style anyway, it lends itself to it. But again, I wasn't there in that scene, so I don't know, but I doubt we can ask once we get somebody of,
we could, perhaps
we can ask, but I doubt the ship because those ships were really big.
Yeah.
I doubt they were actually on anything that the ship was actually moving.
Right. I mean, I think the Vipers, it feels like the Vipers had some kind of, you know, a little bit of gimbaling so that you can fake the, like, we're being banked into these turns. And
right.
But yeah, a big, the Raptors.
The Raptor was really quite large because you could fit. I mean, we were all in, you could fit 13, 14 people in there. Like that would be a big thing to kind of bounce around.
Yeah. Here's Lee being a dick again.
Yeah.
Because he found out that Kara went over his head and presented a plan
to the XO.
To the XO of how they could deal with the Baystar.
Which, granted, he has a point here. He didn't have a point earlier because she can screw whoever she wants to screw.
Right. I mean,
he has a point here. If he's the CAG and she's one of his pilots and she doesn't go through him to a higher up,
Yeah, I mean, it is a like an order chain of command kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That he's coming this hot again is weird, and it super bothered me that she apologized.
I know, at the end. Yeah, she apologized for having sex with Baltar.
Yeah, she's not apologizing for going over his head.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, because if that was what it was, she'd have done that first. But she kind of like, he starts to walk away, and she kind of softens, and she says she's sorry. And it's like, come, no, what is she sorry for? You're an asshole, Lee.
Now, am I reading that wrong?
That's how I read
it. When I watched it, I was like, she's apologizing for having sex with Baltar, and she shouldn't.
No, she shouldn't. That's how
but
I read it.
Maybe she was apologizing for going over his head.
Because I feel like that would have been in the beginning of the scene.
Yes.
If that's what she felt, if that's what she thought her transgression was, she'd have done that at the top. But yeah. Instead, at the end, it's like, I'm sorry. And I was emotional. Like, I'm sorry, Lee. Mm-hmm. Fuck you, Lee. Sorry. I'm sorry, Jamie. I'm sorry, everybody. But he's an asshole.
I just saw a tweet that we need to go to France to interview Jamie. The podcast. I'm like, yeah, you know, sci-fi, you want to take us there?
Dear sci-fi, here's what we need. We need like 10 grand to go to France and interview Jamie and stay in like a chalet somewhere lovely.
Right?
Yeah, business class tickets, and we can eat very well and drink all the good wine, and maybe we'll talk to him for an hour and we'll fly back.
I think that's...
We need three blizzards because we got to bring Alec. Yeah. We can't just go and three not bring Alec.
So this is more like 15, 20 grand.
Yeah, but I mean, they're a network. That's nothing. That's catering exactly. For a week.
Sci-fi.
Hey. Hey, y'all.
Hey. So now we are wrapping towards the end.
Yes.
I did my second to the last note is Starbuck apologizes. Mm. And now we're at the kicker.
Now we're at the kicker.
That leads us into the next part two.
Right.
Rosalind is making a dangerous play using Starbuck.
Yes, because Rosalind believes that the right thing to do is to go back to Caprica and get the arrow. Whereas Kara's plan is to sort of kamikaze that raider into the Baystar and destroy it.
Right, because Baltar has determined that this piece of equipment that they found is actually like a transponder. Right. So they can put that in the raider. And
think it's a Cylon ship, and then they get close enough to detonate it. And so, and what Rosalind is trying to do.
And Adama is going along with that plan.
And I was like, yeah, that's the plan. And Rosalind is appealing directly to Starbuck to say, you were religious, right? You grew up believing in the gods. I am the dying leader. I am the person who prophecy spoke of.
And she admits she has cancer too.
Right. I have cancer. You three people know this, and you're now the fourth.
Don't tell anyone.
And Adama's lying that he knows the way to Earth. And if we're going to find the way to Earth, we need the arrow of Apollo and open the tomb of Athena. And that's how we get there. And if Arthur's where we need to go, this is the only way to get there.
Yeah, I don't know why they can't just stay on Kobol.
Well, because the Cylons are all there. Because the Cylons now
true,
know.
But if they get rid of the Cylons.
But that's a
but
lot
then
of Cylons.
The Cylons know where Kobol is. Right. That's the thing. They're always going to be running. They're always going to be defending as opposed to finding Earth.
Right. Even if they destroy the Baystar, there would be Cylons who know that have radioed back and says, hey, guys, send everything. This is where they are.
Yeah. And it'll be a new cap. And it'll be another Caprica.
Right.
Just destroyed.
Yeah. So the idea is, will Starbuck decide to follow her own plan and destroy the Baystar, or Rosalind's gambit of sending her back to Caprica for this fakakta idea of an arrow and a tomb and prophecy and destiny?
And as Starbuck, as a believer, you think she's going to go one way, and then she's just like, I don't defy orders.
Yes. Until.
But then she says, Adama knows where Earth is. He said he knew where it was. Yeah. And I love Rosalind's line. Ask him.
Yeah.
And that's always right. Like it's,
and you, when if, she
you,
does.
If you don't come back with a rebuke on that and go rebuke on that and go, well, no, you see, he was saying that. If you just look at someone seriously and go ask him, the person pretty much knows.
Yeah. I got to ask him. I think he might be lying.
And but of course she does.
She does.
And not directly.
No, she's very guarded and he's very guarded. It's like, how long do you think we're going to get? It's going to be till we get there. He's like, it's hard to say. It's like, but we're close. Like, well, we're getting there. It's very like, if he knew, he'd have told her.
Because he's so direct and she's his like daughter almost, right?
Yep.
He would, and that's the thing is she knows he would tell her.
Yeah.
And or at least give her something a little bit more concrete so she knows and
she sees right through him.
Yeah.
And so then when she gets out there in her stolen raider and when she has the opportunity to either carry through her mission, the military mission.
That was my version of FTL.
Yeah, nice job. I buy it. They should just like sound effects is bullshit. Just get Trish in.
And that's not really FTL. FTL is just like,
yeah,
gone. Right.
But like once she makes her, she spools up her FTL drive and everybody's like, this is not part of the test. We're running through to make sure that we can get this done. And Adama gives her the speech of like, I want you to remember one thing. I don't regret anything that I did. Be sure whatever you're going to do, you don't regret it later. Mm-hmm. And she jumps away.
And there we are at the.
Yes. The way she goes back home.
I wonder what's going to happen next episode.
Big things.
I think I know a few big things.
I think I will have to rewatch to remember a few big things, but I remember a big thing or two. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to say.
No, because you got to listen in next week.
That would be spoilers. We're not going to spoil anything for you. We love you too much to spoil it.
I know. We've already been accused of spoiling.
I know. We already.
I thought, in the beginning, I thought anybody listening to this has already watched it, so we can say whatever we want.
Yeah.
And then apparently there's some newbies.
There are people who are using this as an excuse to watch it for the first time. So,
which we love you.
We do very much. And so to respect your virgin ears, we will keep our spoilers to a minimum and cut them out of earlier episodes where we may have had guests who might have been like, oh, remember when this happens in season 4? Like, no, snip.
Yes, yeah, snip.
We got to circumcise this bit right here. Just a little off the top. A little off the top.
What if it's in the middle?
Oh, that is not circumcision. That is ritual sacrifice.
Yes. Well, I remember, I'm bouncing all over. Sorry, Alec. I was going over here with the mic. Over here with the mic. Over here. Yeah. Yes. I remember some very serious training that I had to do for next episode.
So excellent. I can't wait to talk about it.
I'm excited to talk about it.
Excellent. Excellent. Next week is going to be awesome.
Yes.
But this week, we are done with the Battlestar Galactica cast.
We are finished was tonight.
Yes.
I don't know what that was.
That was very Frau Blücher. That was very young Frau Frankenstein. Blücher.
What's
Cloris Leachman's character is Frau Blücher, and every time they say that there's a horse that neighs, because I think Blücher means glue in German, so every horse is afraid of going to a glue factory, so whenever they say her name, it's
now we've had all three of our versions of horse neighing.
Yes, excellent. I love ending an episode nowhere near where we should have. Young Frankenstein and the German word for glue. We would like to thank Alex Sarche, our audio engineer wizard, the great and mighty Bear McCreary for gifting us with awesome music for our theme.
Who just turned 40.
Oh, the old man.
Can you believe he's only 40?
Jeez.
The genius.
Whatever. Genius. The boy genius.
The boy genius.
The boy genius. The good folks at Sci-Fi for letting us continue to do this. My co-host, Trisha Helfer.
And my co-host, Mark Bernardin.
Hey, we'll see you next week, guys, for Kobold's Last Gleaming Part 2.
I was just going to do that.
Oh, you can do it too.
Duh.
Nice.
Okay. Bye, guys.